Is Nolan Arenado about to get traded from the St. Louis Cardinals? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, February 7th. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. And Troy, we're going to wrap up the AL East previews by talking about the Tampa Bay Rays. We're going to talk about pitchers and catchers reporting beginning over the weekend. By the next time we have a show, there will be some pitchers and catchers in camp officially. But before we do that, you sent me a really interesting trade proposal that kind of leaked, not leaked, proposed, whatever. We don't have exact details on the authenticity of this. Between the Red Sox and the Cardinals, we previously had talked about Arenado had reportedly been willing to waive the no-trade clause to go to Boston. He told St. Louis that. This trade was Nolan Arenado, Jordan Walker, and Tink Hintz to Boston for Tristan Cassis and Masataka Yoshida. My first instinct when I hear that trade offer is that the Cardinals are the ones that say no. Am I off base there, or is that, does that make sense?
No, you're 100%. That 100% makes sense, because I mean, that might get done with Tristan Cassis and Masataka Yoshida for just Nolan Arenado. But when you're adding in Jordan Walker and Tink Hintz, then that's a definite no from the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah. Trade one of your top pit, your top prospects, a pitcher, and then a former top prospect who you still believe in and reportedly have resisted calls to move him. Never mind the fact that you're taking on salary with Yoshida. And part of the reason they wanted to move Arenado was to free up salary money so they could reinvest it in different parts of the organization that they had been pulling from to fund the major league payroll, right? Some of their development stuff, some of their scouting stuff. They had underfunded those areas in previous years so that they could continue running larger major league payrolls than what I guess the revenues or the owner's profits would allow, right? So it feels like this deal, Arenado for Cassis, do you think that just straight up that would happen? Or do you expect that Boston would need to throw in some sort of young non-40-man pitching prospect just to push that one over the edge?
It really just depends on how serious St. Louis is about wanting to cut payroll. I know that adding another prospect in the deal won't add any more payroll to the deal, but it depends on St. Louis's goal. If their goal is to strictly cut payroll and not really work towards increasing the speed of their rebuild, then Nolan Arenado for Tristan Cassis straight up should get the deal done. But if they do also want to kind of work towards this full rebuild that they've been kind of hesitant to begin over the last few years, then I think that, yeah, they would need another prospect in the deal. While Tristan Cassis right now, I'm pretty sure, is on league minimum without looking it up, he should be pretty close to arbitration and he'll be getting a raise here soon. So while
I want to say he's 2 years in or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And so while it would be cutting payroll for not that he'd be making $30 million or whatever it is that Nolan Arenado is making, but he'd be making more than just league minimum in a couple years. So it's I think that should get it done, just personally, we're disregarding all of that. But it just depends on the Cardinals' overall goal here.
I think in a perfect world from Boston's perspective, this deal is two separate deals, right? They make a trade to get Arenado, but I don't know if Cassis is necessarily the right guy to send back to St. Louis. Like, if you look at St. Louis, they announced Wilson Contreras, the catcher, is moving to first base. Nolan Gorman's a guy who's played third and second, but defensively he struggles a little bit. He's probably also a first baseman. They have Thomas Sujacy on the minor league or on the major league roster, expected to make it this year, who can play anywhere in the infield. They're already projected as of now, obviously, without Arenado having moved yet, to have Alec Burleson on the bench. I would argue St. Louis should probably make this deal and go ask for a pitching prospect. And then Boston can turn around and make a deal with a team that with a poor team that needs a first baseman, like the Mariners, and go try to get some sort of pitching upgrade there. And so, like, I do like the matchup of Boston and St. Louis. I just don't know if this deal makes sense. And even just Cassis going back to St. Louis, while I'm sure they'd love the multiple years of team control, just don't know how much sense that makes when you have all of these dudes on the roster that can play first base. And what you really need is to upgrade your pitching, because one, it's a bunch of old guys, right? Steven Matz, Eric Fetty, Miles Mikolas, Sonny Gray, like 35, 36, 33, 32, like a bunch of old guys anyway. And some of your top pitching prospects that you've tried to get to the majors haven't worked out as starters. Matthew Liberatore, Gordon Graceffo. Like, you need to get major league pitchers, or pitchers to the majors. And you have a lot of prospects coming up. Max Rogic, I would like him out of college in the 22 draft. Quinn Matthews is an NRI to spring training. Cooper Yerpe is a big fan of just a funky lefty out of, I think it was Oregon State there. But bulking up the pitch, I think, is the area where St. Louis needs to work. And Cassis just doesn't make a ton of sense to me for a team that already has a lot of options at first base and DH. They either need pitching or they need, you know, a replacement third baseman. They don't need another first baseman.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And I do like the idea of the Red Sox sending a pitching prospect and then looking to move Cassis to the Seattle Mariners for a Brian Wu, or trying to work out a deal. It'd probably take more than just Tristan Cassis for Brian Wu or Luis Castillo, but either of those and adding those to the Red Sox rotation, that would greatly improve their chances in the American League East, which we both kind of are high on after we saw a few days ago.
Yeah, and like we kind of believe that St. Louis or that Boston can do it, and it's like, just get some more reinforcements and kind of help out with that. Okay, outside of that, a couple small signings went down on Thursday. We saw Juan Moncada, 1 year, $5 million to the Angels. We saw Tommy Pham, 1 year, $4 million to the Pirates. I think I almost said it makes sense that Pham will play more than Moncada, but I forgot that Anthony Rendon is on the Angels. Who has a bigger impact next year, Pham or Moncada?
I think it's going to be Moncada, just because of how many third basemen the Los Angeles Angels have had to play since they gave Anthony Rendon a 7-year, $245 million contract to ride their injured list more often than not, because Yoan Moncada is probably going to be their everyday third baseman while Anthony Rendon's busy sitting at home watching games with his leg in a cast and complaining about the season being too long. So I definitely got to go with Yoan Moncada on that. Tommy Pham's going to be good for the Pirates. I mean, they needed to do something, and they still need to do a lot more, considering they have one of the game's biggest stars in Paul Skeens in their pitching rotation, who is going to be in his first full season in Major League Baseball, and their big addition this offseason was Tommy Pham. But I think it's going to be Yoan Moncada out of those two.
I don't think I realized that Pham actually played for three different teams last year. He started off with the White Sox. He was part of that big three-man deal or three-team deal that sent him and Fetty to the Cardinals and then sent Michael Kopech to the Dodgers. But then he was waived the end of August and picked up by the Royals just in time to have postseason eligibility. And for being a 36-year-old in the outfield, like, I feel like he was okay, right? He hit .248 on the year, only had 9 homers in 107 games, but, you know, just slugging's not really there. The on-base wasn't super high. It never really has been super high for him in his career. But, like, he's serviceable. I just don't see – I'm kind of confused. He did play all three positions. I guess he's going to play a right field for the Pirates, because Brian Reynolds is stuck in left. Terrible looking extension, by the way, they gave Brian Reynolds. I think I was screaming not to do that when they did it. I guess he'll play some right field. He did play some center field last year for the White Sox, believe it or not, at age 36. It's just amazing. But I just don't know if I believe in Moncada ever kind of getting back to figuring it out. He looked really good to start the year. He was hitting 275, but that was 12 games. And he got hurt and didn't play the rest of the year. So his best full season was 2019. He got MVP votes. I forget about this. He hit 315 with a 915 OPS and 25 homers in 130 games. I forget about that season from him, but just never has really seemed to be the guy that we all thought he was going to be when he was the main part of that return for Chris Sale. So kind of funny how it came back to the Boston Red Sox there. All right, let's get this out of the way, I guess. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Rays. It's going to be a weird year for Tampa, right? Simply because they don't have their own ballpark. They're going to play in the Yankees spring training ballpark. Steinbrenner Field, which is obviously going to be super weird. They're going to be splitting time along with you know, some of the minor league affiliates down there. But lineup specifically, we got the news. Christopher Morel is officially an outfielder now. He'll be in left field. Am I wrong to say that outside of shortstop, where I've never really been a big fan, I guess, of Taylor Walls, I kind of like this lineup to be at least above average? Am I weird for saying that? Like, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. No, I think you're right on. I think they're going to be above average. It's honestly a solid lineup. I mean, Yandy Diaz leading off, projected to lead off on FanGraphs. Which one is that? I know we talked about this a few weeks ago. Is that Brandon Lowe
versus Lau? Brandon Lau? I don't remember. I'll look it up while you talk. Just call him Brandon and I'll look it up while you talk.
Yeah, the second baseman Brandon, Junior Caminero. And then Josh, his Brandon's potential maybe cousin, maybe not, Danny Jansen and Christopher Morel.
It rhymes with now, so Lau, Brandon Lau.
Okay, and Josh is the same way?
I believe they're related, so yeah, okay. These are the ones that are related. Nathaniel's, or maybe not.
All three of them, Nathaniel, Josh, and Brandon, just need to all have different last names. Even if two of them are related, they should just have different last names.
Josh is Lowe, so they're not related. It's Nathaniel and Brandon that are related. Nathaniel with the Texas, now with Washington. They're related. Josh is not related, but has the same last name.
Bubba.
No. Josh and Brandon, whatever. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Josh is Lau. Brandon is now Lau. Brandon's the same? Why is their pronunciation different on Baseball Reference if it's... Josh is like, it's pronounced, it says Lau. Okay. And then Brandon, Baseball Reference says, sounds like now. Just use the same thing if they're pronounced the same way. I can't be the only person that struggled with this. Oh my God. This is not great video, but it's just annoying. What? I officially don't know now. I thought I knew. Now I don't know. Now I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. I sent us on this tangent. Now
Josh is pronounced Low. It's Josh Low, Brandon Lau. God, that's annoying.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, like you said, it doesn't matter, just like the Tampa Bay Rays playoff chances, because they're not going to make it in the American League East. But this
Wow, Tampa. Oh man, the biscuits folks are going to be so mad at me for this.
Is it wow or is it whoa?
Doesn't matter.
But no, the lineup. They have a good lineup. Is the crux of this conversation here? It's a solid lineup. It's an above average lineup.
Yeah, a lot of young guys, right? Like once you get past your first two, everybody's in their 20s, right? Yeah. Josh is 27. Jonathan Aranda, 26. Johnny DeLucan, center, is 26. Taylor Walls is like 28. He's kind of one of the old men here. Junior Caminero, awesome. I watched him in double. I called a week of his games in double A, and he was a freaking machine. Massive power. He could be the next like superstar power hitter in baseball. He's only 21 years old. The bench, we mentioned this before we got on recording. They signed Eloy Jimenez to a minor league deal, made him an invite to spring training. That's really intriguing to me because he has flashed really good at times, but he's been so bad recently. That's why you got him on a minor league deal. But if this works out, this absolutely can be one of those massive value things, which is what Tampa Bay has to do. They have to find the value in their signings. I think that's a no-brainer, and I love the idea of it. And then, honestly, I don't hate this rotation either. Shane McClanahan, Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepiot was part of the main return from the Glasnow trade. Shane Boz, I've always been really high on. Now he's healthy again. Zach Whitehale, Drew Rasmussen, like that's a good 1-6. And the thing with a Rays pitching staff is they're always going to have stuff. Like their stuff is always going to be really good because this is a stuff organization. They believe in dudes who get stuff. Also a fun fact, if you watch a Rays catcher, they will set up down the middle every single pitch. They don't give you different targets in the zone. They just set up down the middle and let the natural movement of the pitch or the natural variation in your location handle it. It's a really interesting way to work on pitcher accuracy, right? Sometimes for a fastball, it may drift up a little bit. And for like a breaking ball, they may signal where they want it to go. But so often on a Rays game, they will just set up down the middle because they know the average MLB pitcher misses his spot by 6 to 8 inches, right? So it's a great idea. I wish that like when you got to lower levels that I saw a lot of college teams and minor league teams, I wish they would do this too. I think it's a great idea. But yeah, I don't hate this rotation. I like this rotation a lot.
Yeah, no, it's also a solid rotation, you know, assuming that they can stay healthy. You know, Shane McClanahan's had injury issues and
coming back from Tommy John, didn't pitch at all last year. What's the workload there, right?
Yeah, and but no, it's a solid rotation. You know, I'm big on Shane McClanahan. I also like Taj Bradley and Shane Baz. I'm right there with you, big on him. And it's another solid unit. And I've talked about it multiple times over the past couple of months that the Tampa Bay Rays are one of the, in my opinion, one of the three elite pitching factories, the Rays, the Astros, and the Atlanta Braves. And they should be showing that again this year with this rotation that they're projected to be putting on the field.
Yeah. I think my top tier is a little bigger. I think I have the Dodgers in there too. I have the Yankees in there. But like, yeah, I mean, you know, Cleveland gets a lot of credit for developing pitchers. But yeah, like they're one of the better ones that figured all that stuff out. And the bullpen, I think, is another situation where it's like, you got some really promising dudes here. Pete Fairbanks struggled a little bit last year, but like he's a very good reliever. Edwin Uceta, I think, Garrett Clevenger, two guys. I've had both of them in fantasy before. I think they're both really good guys. They got Mike Vasile, who has a starter from Philly. I think Philly had acquired him from the Mets, maybe. Mason Montgomery can be another long man in their pen as a lefty. I watched him in Montgomery as well when I did that week of minor league games for the Biscuits. If there's a weakness here outside of the depth, right, I think it's probably in the pen because you have a lot of dudes who are above average, but you don't really have difference makers unless the Rays can manufacture one, which they absolutely could manufacture one. Let's not ignore that. But I do think the bullpen ends up, like, when you have a rotation with as many workload questions as this one has, I then worry that you don't have a robust enough bullpen to support them. And I think that's ultimately one of the things that could hold this team back, is giving away wins late in games and out of the pen.
Yeah, and we've talked about it all week. The offenses that they're going to face in the American League East, gross, which is it's nasty. And those offenses have a bunch of guys that if you don't have a large enough lead late in the games and your bullpen's not on its game, they're going to make you pay, and they're going to come back and win the ball game. Especially, you know, teams like the teams that we think are going to finish in the top three in the division: the New York Yankees, mm-hmm, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Boston Red Sox. Those offenses are just insanely good. And speaking of offense, we also forgot about Ha-Seong Kim.
Yeah, I was gonna find a way to bring it back to him. They brought him back, and or they brought him in on a free agent deal, and the goal here is for him to take over for Taylor Walls, who was not only a below average hitter, but was well below average. WRC plus was 60 last year. He was actually negative war despite playing shortstop, which is incredibly hard to do because you have to be really either you have to be bad both offensively and defensively. Even Orlando Arcia, I'm pretty sure, was worth positive war last year despite being one of the worst hitters in baseball. Let me see. Arcia was 0.5 war despite being one of the worst hitters in all of baseball. So, like, what does that tell you about how Taylor Walls is playing? He has to be bad at both. And yeah, it's just like that helps. There's so much minor league depth in this organization for position players, right? Like catchers, Dominic Keegan, Kenny Piper. Like, I like both those guys. First base, Xavier Isaac, Trey Morgan are two highly drafted first basemen. Bob Seymour is there as well. Second base, Tanner Murray. They've got Curtis Meade in their minors, right? Like, really quality player there. They Braden Taylor was a first rounder in 23. Carson Williams is the best defensive shortstop in the minors. Like, they got a ton of depth, you know, outfielders. Chandler Simpson, I think, led all of organized baseball in steals last year. Cameron Mister, Tristan Peters. Colton Ledbetter was a second-round pick last year, or in 23. Lots of minor league depth, but pitching is their best guys are all at the majors right now. And I think the bullpen is in a similar situation to the rotation where the best guys are all in the majors already. And at least in the rotation, they're just not good enough. And that's my worry. Although at the same time, you can always find relief pitching either on the waiver wire. You can find it in trades and at the deadline. I just don't know if this organization is going to be aggressive enough at making all at trades to get all of like to get us what they need in that division they're in. Like, are they already out of it at the trade deadline, or do they have a chance? And it's just a, if they end up falling back to fifth place, it's going to be attrition over the course of a season because they just lose too many players. Like, what's the play out of the season here for the Rays? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it mostly depends on the health of their starting pitching staff, and because if they stay healthy, you know, they could keep it close in the American League East, especially up until the deadline, if they all can stay healthy, and if you can get Shane McClanahan enough meaningful innings and coming back from Tommy John surgery. It's just, Can they do that? Can they stay healthy? And if they stay healthy and they keep it close, then you might see them move some of that prospect capital that they have a surplus of, especially offensively, to bring in guys to help their bullpen or to help their rotation or maybe even to help their offense. But if they don't stay healthy and they start falling back, then yeah, they're going to be once again gearing up for the future, which, you know, they could be even more competitive in 2026 with some of that prospect capital coming up next year. But it just all boils down to the health of the rotation.
I mean, I'm personally of the opinion if Carson Williams can figure out some of his swing and miss issues, which are significant, you know, in Double A last year, if he can figure out some of his swing issues, like him and Junior Caminero could be one of the best left sides of an infield in all of baseball. Like, I legitimately think that because their carrying tools are like 80 grades. It's 80 grade power for Junior Caminero. It's 80 grade defense for Carson Williams. He also hits the ball really hard. Like, there's so much potential here, and it's just, you've got to figure it out. And they're going to have a transitionary period where Yandy is going to age out and contract's going to toll. Brandon's going to have that issue. I'm so terrified to say a last name now. Brandon's going to going to eventually age out and get too expensive and have to move on. And it's the next wave. Like, I'm confident that some combination of Jonathan Aranda and Curtis Meade can fill in for Brandon at second. But, like, the strength of this right now is the depth and the starting rotation. And I just don't know if they have the horses to make it for an entire season. Like, because it's the position player depth, to clarify, and then the starting rotation. And I feel like this is, yeah, like, you have a bunch of above average dudes. Nobody is a star yet, right? Caminero can be a star, but you have a bunch of above average dudes, and they all have to live up to their potential or get to their potential. And then you need to keep your starting pitchers healthy. It's a fine line, but I could see how it could work. I can see how it could collapse. Final prediction, I guess. Do we think this is a fifth place team in the East, or do we think they get past someone?
honestly, if there's any team that they could get past, I think it would be the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm sorry, the Baltimore Orioles. But I do think that when all is said and done, this team is going to be in fifth place in the American League East.
Yeah, we are, we are both super low on the Orioles. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who are not happy about us with us for that. But I genuinely, they have all of the depth problems that the Rays have, except I don't think the rotation's as good. Like, they're in a similar situation as, like, to me, as the Rays. Their position player talent at the majors might be a little bit better. Like, Henderson's a freaking star, right? And they have similar depth, but they're pitching starting off behind Tampa Bay. And so I kind of group them in the same bucket of like teams that act poor when they shouldn't be poor and just don't have enough quality and quantity in their pitching staffs ultimately to make it through a full season and still be effective in the postseason. That's kind of where I have both these teams. And so it makes sense as of now that we have them kind of in the back, although I do think Pecota has the Orioles winning this division. So, I don't know what to think anymore. The AL East is the most confounding based on how you feel it should end versus probably how it's going to actually end.
Right.
Simply because projection systems think so differently from we do than what we do.
Yeah, and I did want to touch on this before we got out of here. The projection systems currently have the Rays home run leader in 2025 to be Junior Caminero with 27. Like they have a lack of power. They only have three guys projected for 20 or more home runs: Morel with 22, Brandon with 24, and then Junior Caminero with 27. Everybody else is less than 20. So while they are above average offensively, I agree with you on that. I think that they could definitely use with more power, and maybe Junior Caminero does it, because I've been very outspoken about the about the projection systems on Twitter and especially FanGraphs projection system, but. Maybe Junior Caminero could be that guy that crosses the 30 home run range, but they are going to need a lot of power, especially in the American League East.
And maybe that little tiny ballpark they're in will actually be a help for that, because they're playing in a minor league stadium all season. It's kind of wild.
Nope.
This has been First Pitch for Friday, February 7th. Again, next time we're back with you, pitchers and catchers will be in spring training. So get hyped for that. We'll preview another division next week. In the meantime, you're listening on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel and hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.